Jags, you were punching that time card last night, boy. That was earning your paycheck, my guy. 16 runs. The A's, not the Brewers. Allen Iverson style, not at practice. We're not talking about a game, not a game. This was not the Brewers who were headed to the playoffs. This was the A's. That was UGLY, and the Nats didn't have an alibi.
Yeah, how you doing, Grant? I'm good. Thanks.
Good to see you, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Well, I mean, it's been a rough stretch. I mean, this team has been through a couple of those this year, but in a way, this almost feels more demoralizing when they lost 11 in a row, because in that streak, it felt like they could have won maybe 7 or 8 of those games. Here, they've been down early and down and out for most of the night. So, yeah, we're going deep into our preparation story time, just trying to keep it entertaining over the course of 3+ hours with all the pitches being thrown. So that's our job. You know, that's what we signed up for. So we're going to call a big league game tonight, and we're going to try to make it fun and entertaining, and hopefully this one will be a win.
Well, you guys did that. You kept me entertained. I mean, it was a busy game. There were a lot of runs. You could have a recap of this game would have taken 6-7 minutes probably. I mean, it was ridiculous action from the A's perspective. Jags, how about Cade Cavalli tonight? 3 years in the making, we'll see him on the mound for the second time ever.
Yeah, I mean, I punched it in. It's 1,076 days since his first, and that to this point, only big league start. You know, saw him walk in the clubhouse. He was greeting guys, big smile on his face. So this is a long time coming, and this is a big 6 weeks for Cade Cavalli. I mean, right now, from the way things have gone here in the second half of this season, the Nationals have need for starting pitchers. So they have to find out what they have in Cade Cavalli. He's a first-round pick. He was going to make the rotation in 2023 before he went down to Tommy John surgery. And so last year was a lost year after the year off from surgery. And, you know, did he dominate AAA? No, his ERA was over 6, but there were some good things. He averaged well over a strikeout per inning. He's been missing bats with his curveball and his changeup. His fastball has been hit hard. So let's see if he can command the fastball at this level. The A's proved last night they can hit a fastball that's in the middle of the plate. That's where Gore tried to live, and it didn't work. So we know he's got the good curveball changeup. So it's almost like a second big league debut for Cavalli. Hopefully he can stay healthy, finish the season on 2 feet, and make an impression to go into next year being a key part of this rotation.
Jags, one of the few bright spots on this team is James Wood, but not recently with the struggle that he's been in. What have you seen out of him during his struggles? And it feels like he's getting the ball a little bit better recently, but what do you see out of him?
Yeah, we're looking for anything. I mean, there was a hard ground out last night, and you're trying to grasp for that straw. It's just so many strikeouts, and what we've seen is when he doesn't go, the engine, that's not driving the train. So this offense has been kind of stuck in it, but you can't hang what's happened this homestand or the last couple of games in Houston on the offense. But yes, James Wood needs to get going again, and clearly maybe his swing was a little bit off. He was kind of jumping at the ball, not staying back and driving the ball with authority to left center field, which is the patented James Wood swing. And maybe the result of flying open, cheating a little bit, the pitch selection has been not what it has always been. That's always been his calling card. We compared him favorably to Soto last year with his pitch selection breaking into the big leagues as a rookie. And now it's been oftentimes taking strikes down the middle, chasing the breaking ball off the outside. Chase rate the last couple of games has been better. So again, we're looking for anything to signal a turnaround. And there's been a game here or there, but nothing consistent. So hopefully, he's got a lefty tonight. They got a lefty tomorrow he's going to face. Hopefully he can stay in there. We know when he's going well, he hangs in there against lefties and powers the ball to left center field. That's what we're looking for tonight.
Jags, one area of this ball club that's very healthy long term is the outfield. You mentioned Woods struggles currently in the short term, but I think we've seen enough to know this guy's going to be a star, maybe a superstar player for the Nationals. They've also got Dylan Cruz coming back from injury, the former number two pick. We've seen Dalen Lyle at the big league level. Bright future for him, perhaps, offensively. Robert Hassel is 4-for-9 since being recalled with 3 extra base hits. He's done some good things. What have you seen from Hassel in this second go-round? I know it's a small sample, but he seems like he's been able to drive the ball a little bit.
Confident approach. I mean, he talked about he felt he was a little bit passive as the at-bats piled up his first time in the big leagues, went down to AAA, started raking again right away, and has come up and has raked right away. So he's going to be in there against the lefty tonight. He was not in there, interestingly, against the righty in last night's game, came off the bench and hit a double in the 9th inning. So this is going to be interesting. I mean, Dylan Cruz has yet to go 9 innings, so they're obviously taking their time on his rehab, considering that he missed almost 2 to 2.5 months Miguel Cairo said today in his press conference, he's looking at this as almost like a mini spring training for Cruz. So he's going to at least finish this week, if not carry the rehab assignment into next week. So at that point, you've got a decision to make. When Cruz comes back, ostensibly to play every day, well, who sits? I mean, Dalen Lyle doesn't deserve to sit. Robert Hassel's playing well. Jacob Young has struggled a bit offensively the last week, but obviously gives you premium defense. So there's going to be options and decisions to be made, and tough decisions, because it's better to have too many choices than not enough choices. And right now they're going to have a lot of choices in the outfield.
Jags, appreciate the time. Hopefully we can call a win tonight.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a scoreless top of the first. Let's start with that.
That would be a baby step. We'll accept that, Jags. Thank you, buddy.
And we'll have fun nonetheless.
Yes, you will. Absolutely. We will be listening right here on The Fan. 6:15 pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Be good, Dave.
Yeah, I feel like when you're going through that process and there's been so many ups and quite a few downs with it, that's the mindset that you got to have. You got to have that vision of where you're going to be one day, and that's what makes going to the yard and putting your work in a little easier to do. And I just had great people around me. The staff was amazing, keeping me encouraged all the time and letting me be around the guys, and the guys have been so good to me, saying, hey, your day will come. Keep putting in the work. We're seeing you. And for it to play out the way it did last night and have a walk-off and see the team get a dub, I mean, it was truly amazing.
Your situation is unique, too, because it's very rare that somebody will get to the show, pitch the one game, right? And then it's almost like getting to the water fountain, getting pulled away right when your lips get on the water and you know you got to get back. Like, how difficult has the process been? It's almost like, I would imagine it would have been easier if you hadn't gotten to the major leagues yet after the one outing, 4-plus innings, and then waiting to get back for 3 years.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that for me, that one game gave me a taste, and I just wanted to get back there, and that's what was in my head. So I had the feelings of being on that exact mound, and I knew when I was putting in the work that I wanted to be on that exact same mound one day, and that made it a lot easier having that taste and just going in every day, visualizing, hey, I'm going to be back there one day. Your days, it will come. And to be back on that exact mound almost 3 years later, was truly incredible.
So was the performance. Cade Cavalli last night touching 100 in the first inning, sitting 98, touched 99 a couple of times. And then the change in the curveball were both fantastic. But as much as I've always been impressed by the velocity, I was not expecting to see 100 last night. How much of that was the excitement of being back in a big league ballpark and having a Red Bull or whatever? Or how sustainable is that to be looking up at the scoreboard and seeing triple digits?
Yeah, I didn't look up, so I didn't know how hard I was throwing. But
did it feel a little harder? Because I think you were up a couple miles per hour from your AAA average.
Yeah, I think these last four or five I've been averaging 97, getting up right around 100. So I think it was pretty on par of what we've been building on, and had a lot of great input from Rafael Chavez down in AAA, Doolittle, Hick, just calling me and saying, hey, we see what you're doing. Keep building on it. And we kept hammering mechanics, and it's just been creeping up. The velocity has been creeping up this last month. And just felt like we were in a great spot. And, it was cool hitting 100, but I just wanted to go out and pitch and put our club in a good spot.
When you talk about Doolittle and Hickey reaching out, are they just watching your starts video-wise with their technology here and then seeing something? And is that like a weekly meeting where at a certain time you're talking to them, or is it occasionally they may just reach out if they see something worth calling about?
Yeah, they reached out, I would say, about a month and a half ago, and we were making some little tweaks with the fastball. And
mechanically or in what like usage?
Usage as well as the slot that I was throwing out of. So we just let it cut a little bit instead of trying to chase like a true ride. We're just going to let it cut. It comes out almost like a football now post-surgery. So we just went to a natural arm slot, and They helped me organize my new arsenal a little bit better. Now that I have the sinker, and we've been using the changeup a lot more, and I feel like they helped me just understand how to use my arsenal.
That was the best I've seen your changeup last night. It was awesome. Did you feel like you had that at that level throughout the AAA season? And then also, you mentioned the new arsenal. I mean, what are the differences, whether it's pitch usage, actual repertoire, from 3 years ago when we saw you against Cincinnati? Like, what do you throw now that you didn't then?
Yeah, the main thing is the fastball slash cutter. I see sometimes it reads as a cutter. I'm truly just throwing a fastball.
So that's interesting. So you don't actually throw a cutter then?
No, that's my four seam, and it'll read cutter, and that's the 95 to 100. It's a fastball cut, and then
that'll play, by the way.
Thank you. And then we've also been working on the slider, so that's the one that you'll see that's 90 to 93, with just a little bit of down action. But we added the sinker in, and I haven't. Normally thrown a sinker in the past, so it's opened up I'm getting good ground ball numbers on it, and trying to get early outs with that.
Cade Cavalli back with the Nationals, lit up the radar gun, and more importantly mowed through the A's lineup last night in what was a really fun environment here at Nats Park. A long time coming. So when you go into a game like that that you've been anticipating for so long, I'd imagine there are some jitters. Did it feel almost like a debut again? Or because you'd had that first start, were you not feeling as if, like, this is a big deal, so to speak, that you got to prove yourself, so to speak?
Yeah, it almost felt like a debut again. 3 years is a long time, over 1,000 days leading up to it. But I was really happy with where my head and my emotions were at. I felt very comfy, and I think a lot of that has to do with the organization letting me be around here in D.C., being around this ballpark, being around the guys. So it just felt very comfy, and I've been visualizing that day for a long time. I put myself on that mound hundreds of times, just meditating and hoping one day it would happen. So when I got out there, I actually felt very comfortable.
Coming off the mound, you touch 100 to get a strikeout with two punchies in the first inning, and I think it was like a 12-pitch inning where you throw 10 strikes. You can't ask for a better frame than that. What's your mindset as you get to the dugout and everybody's greeting you, and now one inning's down and you can kind of settle in and just play baseball?
Yeah, my mindset was just stay in it, keep attacking, and trying to put our team in the best spot to go win a game.
So now, projecting out, you're going to get an opportunity to pitch every 5 days. Like, last night was really cool. The possibility, though, to hang a bunch of those and to string some together. What are your goals the rest of the way? What do you think is realistic for you down the stretch here?
Yeah, like I said, I'm not putting any expectations on myself. I just want to go out, put in the work in the midweeks, get leading up to my start, prepare well, and go out there and compete for these guys. And that's where my head's at, and that's all I want to do.
Cade Cavalli of the Nationals on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. So I saw that it seemed like maybe, I don't know if you just don't publicize it as much. Have you done away with the Cavalli cuts? Are you doing any haircuts anymore? Your barber day's over?
Yeah, I think the barber days are shut down for a second. We're going to give the arm a little break. there's a lot of wrist movement when you're fading up a guy. So, yeah, we're just...
That'll wait till after you play. For people that don't remember, I mean, that was something you'd gotten really good at. Like, not just to the level of, you're not going in and getting Kate at a haircuttery. Like, you could have been the dude going ballpark to ballpark to shape guys up in the clubhouse.
Right.
But, so we're tabling that till after the playing days.
Yes, sir. Yep. Cavs cuts is going to be shut down for a little while.
So what's your, therapy now? What do you do to kind of get away from it and scratch that artistic itch?
Yeah. I love the hunt. I love being in the woods and being in a river fly fishing. I've always loved that, and I've been able to experience that with my family. So I'm looking forward to get back to that. And I also picked up painting over rehab, so might paint on a canvas a little bit this offseason. It's always fun to do, challenge yourself in different areas that, get your creative mind going a little bit.
You a good painter or just learning at it?
I'm just learning. I'm all right. Nothing special. Yeah.
Last night was fun, and Nats fans needed a game like it. I mean, did you feel any added pressure just because of the way things have been trending here lately? You're taking the ball after a historically rough 4 days as a pitching staff. Did that add to your anxieties at all, or was that not a factor?
No, that's not a factor. I know these guys on the staff, and I know that they go out and they compete their hardest every night, and I just want to go compete at their level. And I was glad I was able to put our club in a position to get a win.
I should tell everyone that they're warming up for the national anthem. We're not talking the national anthem right now. If you're at the ballpark all day, you'll hear a couple of those warm-ups. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was great to see you back on the mound. I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. I appreciate you a ton. Thank you.
Cade Cavalli of the Nationals on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Big thanks to him for giving us some time in the dugout before the day game today. That'll do it for this Thursday G&D from Nationals Park. Want to thank Wes and Darris for their work back in our Half Street studios. For Toby out here, I'm Grant saying so long. Tomorrow, we are back at it at 2 o'clock, the final show of the week, the final show without Danny until he is back from Scotland on Monday. So, enjoy your evenings, and we will chat again at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Thank you for coming.
Junks are brought to you by our friends at Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junks. Thanks for listening on 106.7 The Fan. If you can't listen on the radio, you can listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's by far and away the best is to listen on the radio.
Not even close.
I mean, it's not even close, right? But it is. I think it is cool that we're on Spotify finally. That's cool.
Yeah,
I
we're
like
also
that.
Streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. You don't have any excuses
for
not consuming the show in some fashion.
Zero. And we're really
pointing at you, radio listeners.
Yeah, and we all need to lock in now, okay?
Yes.
We're all done with the summer vacation stuff. Mm-hmm. I know Cake's going away next week, but let's wrap that all up and let's lock in on football.
Yeah, okay? Let's wrap it all up after my summer vacation is done.
Because we're not locking in on the Nats postseason possibilities. Well,
we wanted to get back into the Nationals, and... Look, it's hard to not argue that we are sitting at rock bottom. Yesterday, they get pummeled again, 16-7. The A's just peppering the Nats pitching staff with hit after hit. The Nats have dropped six in a row. I'm stealing some of this from Mark Zuckerman. The combined score of those games, 70-26. They've lost the first four games of this homestand, 54-20.
Mm-hmm.
And here are some quotes from Mackenzie Gore.
Typically I throw the ball over the plate when I'm good and bad. But yeah, there were some balls over the middle of the plate, and they hit them hard. No swing and miss tonight, and you know they were on everything. So yeah, I'm sure some of that was location, and they hit everything. So
how would you evaluate your outing as a whole tonight?
Not good. It's just kind of.
What kind of question is that?
It was bad. You know, what I gave up 8 runs, and it's kind of the way to put it. It was bad. So.
I know you went through that rough stretch last year. What do you think you can take or learn from that that maybe you can apply here moving forward?
I can get better. We've made a little mess here the last couple weeks. So I mean, as you said, it's been frustrating. We're all frustrated. This has got to the point where we're better than this. We just got to make the adjustments. Something needs to change. Like I said, they were on everything tonight.
You know what's weird? First of all, the second question, much better, right? Fair question. You went through these struggles last year.
Yeah.
What did you learn from that? You know, rebounded? Because I think at the end of the year, he pitched very well again, right? If I remember correctly. Man, he seems awfully nonchalant for a guy that's just getting raked.
He also has quotes that we don't have audio of.
Yeah.
He said, quote, "This is embarrassing. We shouldn't just try to act like nothing happened here. What has happened this homestand is not acceptable no matter what happened last week. We're all better than this. This is embarrassing."
All right. Those are better quotes.
We've got to not let it affect everybody. Mm-hmm. We've got to be able to come together as a group and get better. What happened this homestand? It's hard to watch.
Honestly,
and he's right. That's your money quote right there.
I'm glad I heard that because I didn't hear that kind of in the way he was talking previously. Right. This will sound dumb, but when you're losing like this, it's kick over cooler time. It's right. like somebody smash a
Somebody's
locker.
Somebody's got to cause a scene.
Cause a scene.
Yeah.
Somebody get all the bats and throw them out on the field.
Do the Brad Pitt bit in Moneyball. He's like, this is what losing should say. Like, he walks in and everybody's celebrating. And he's just like, you guys are getting your ass kicked. That's not, you're not supposed to be acting like this.
Yeah.
It should be awkward silence in the locker room.
They're playing like a minor league roster would play.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not playing like they've got major league players on their roster because it's hard to do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
When you're giving up 25 hits in a game, think about that. That's 24 hits in 48 at bats last night. That's hard to do. Even if you're not a good team. It shouldn't be that easy. That's batting practice. And Mackenzie Gore and his numbers, and we kind of went through them at the top of the show, but I mean, Mackenzie Gore in his last seven starts basically has an ERA of 9.
Mm-hmm. No, I know.
Atrocious. That was one of the prize possible trade candidates before the deadline was Mackenzie Gore. A lot of teams were interested in Mackenzie Gore, especially these division leaders who needed a number three starter possibly behind their their really good number one and twos. And they couldn't trade him for whatever reason, but man, now it's looking like they should have just given him away because he's not been good since July 1st.
Another ugly stat. This is Mark Zuckerman said, per Stathead, the last team to give up 100 base runners in a four game span was the 1993 Phillies. He also says they went on to play in the World Series that year, but still, like, they're putting up historically bad numbers lately.
Currently, only two teams worse, right? Chicago and Colorado. They'll probably catch Chicago the way they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they'll catch Colorado, but they're on, like, an epic, basically, 5-6 year run. It's like an epic run. They've been so bad.
Since COVID year.
It's epic.
I know. You could argue, what did they win in the first year after COVID? Was it 51 games?
I don't know. It wasn't great.
55 games?
Look it up.
It was just a weird season. I
assume they're going to get more than 51 wins, but they may not get much more the way they're playing.
All right, 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in, if you're still hanging in there. I know I had them on the other day. They were playing a day game, and I used to do that all the time. Back in the day, in the 2015 to 2020, 2019 era, we would have them on every night. So it's like the Nats game was on every night. We had the Nats alerts on our phone and everything, checking it out constantly. It's just not a thing anymore.
Their last four seasons, they've won 65 from 21 to 24. 65, 55, 71, 71.
Oh, so it was the year after that.
Well, let me ask you a question, Eric. Would you be watching and invested in the team if they were like the Marlins, like a 500 team?
Maybe. I don't know. I'd have to feel like they were on the come. And
I mean,
like,
they'd be exceeding expectations. I mean,
if they were 81-81, like on that track, yeah, I think I would be checking
show
in.
Hope.
Like, I think I would be.
Didn't they just sweep the Yankees?
Yeah. First time ever.
Yeah, I mean, like at least there's signs.
I know, but the Marlins aren't going to make the playoffs.
True.
Like if the Nats were like that, the Nats were going to miss the playoffs.
No, I think it's okay if they're trending in the right direction. We had a 10-year run or whatever, right? We're obviously always in the postseason and, winning a bunch of whatever, division titles or whatever. And, okay, now you got to go through a rebuild. But it just can't go on forever.
I didn't think this was possible 2 months ago. They've fallen behind the Wizards in the local team power rankings or relevancy rankings.
Probably true. Right? I have more interest.
I mean, the Wizards at least they're assembling some talent, and there's a little bit of buzz about the rebuild and the way that they're doing things.
Yeah. Trey Johnson business. Kid looks like he's legit.
Right. There's at least some optimism. Like, there's no, like, who's optimistic about the Washington Nationals right now?
Right.
Can't, anybody?
Nobody.
Can you find one person that's optimistic about the direction of the franchise?
The only thing you can
good luck finding one.
The only thing you can say is James Wood, and right now it's hard to say that right now, the way he's playing.
Man. The way he hit in June, you thought, oh, he's our next Soto.
Right.
But the way he's hit since July 1st.
No, that's baseball.
He's Juan from Rockville.
But he's a young player, but it's still difficult to go through a bad stretch for that long.
But to answer your question, Valdez, I think at this point, if they were 500 and they were being competitive and winning every other game, and I think I would be more locked in and kind of back in my old school. I like having it on. I like watching them.
Yeah. I mean, it would give you some hope for next year if they were, because the Marlins payroll is probably right around where the Nats is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe a little higher.
But it was different. It was different sort of in our run, though, like when we had like I felt like Scherzer was must-watch TV when he was on the mound, right? I felt like Stras, when he was pitching, was must-watch. Maybe not Gio, even though Gio had success. Corbin had his moments. But those two guys in particular, like you wanted to watch those starts.
Man, who are the Marlins paying all of their dead money to? Their active cash payroll is $38.5 million, but their payroll is the total cash outlay is $89 million. They must have a bunch of like dead or deferred contracts on their books too.
Did they have Stanton?
Well, Alcantara probably is making I don't know what his salary is, but he's probably making good money.
Let's go.
Probably some of their pitchers.
Let's go to Kyle. 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. Is this rock bottom?
How could you get any lower than the way the Nats are right now?
Sure, kind of feels like it. Let's go to Kyle. Kyle, what's up, buddy? You're all with the Jucks.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Kyle.
Jason hit it on the head. They're run like a minor league team because they got minor league owners. Let me tell you a little bit about the learners. I work in one of their buildings in Tyson's.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, but they run the Nationals just like they run their buildings. And we got to remember how they made their money. They made their money in real estate. And real estate owners, all they care about is appreciation of the asset.
Mm-hmm.
They bought this team for $400 million. They don't care if there's an ROI and a win for the community. All they care about is the appreciation of the value of the asset, and they will run it with the least amount of maintenance as possible. The building I work in Tyson's, guys, it houses a top-tier restaurant in the lobby. That restaurant has not had air conditioning for 2 years.
Mm.
For 2 years. They finally fixed their air conditioning this week, and guess what? The rest of the building doesn't have air conditioning. When they went to zoning, and I know this because one of my buddies worked in the zoning commission, when they went for zoning on this building, they didn't zone it and get appropriate zoning to have the number of tenants they actually were selling to the individuals they were selling to the tenants of the building. And so what do they do instead? Now they have these doors that are impossible to open. They have urinals in this building that have literally 6 inches of standing urine because they can't have working plumbing. And it's been that way for months. They are slumlords, and they run this team like they're slumlords.
So they're nickel and dimers as property owners.
They are.
Yeah.
And look at what they're doing with the Nationals. They made their ROI. I mean, what they're worth $2.5 billion, $2 billion
now?
Team?
I think if they could get $2 billion, they'd sell it.
I think that the team is worth $2+ billion. I don't think any prospective buyers are looking at them as being worth.
I mean, the New York Mets were just sold. What were the Mets sold for?
I think it was outrageous. Like around $2 billion.
Maybe a little bit higher than that.
What were the Lakers sold for? That's the one that is mind blowing.
$10 billion.
Yeah. But I mean, if the Mets are just over $2 billion, I mean, what are the Nats?
Steve Cohen bought the Mets for $2.4 billion.
All right, so he bought for $2.5 billion.
But that was
a year and a half or two years ago.
I think that was 2020.
That was 5 years ago. Okay,
November 6, 2020 is the date on this story.
I bet you could find someone if you dug hard enough, and I don't know, maybe the economy roars back a little bit, that will do it. Maybe pay $2 billion, but
man,
there's not a huge pool.
Yeah,
you don't think a Jeff Bezos or somebody like that?
I don't know what people would be willing to pay.
I mean, if I'm willing to
pay, they're not worth it.
Yeah, if I'm shelling out $2 billion, I want at least a product that I feel like has some potential to be good in the next couple of years. Like, I'm not just going to pay $2 billion for a last-place team.
Well, you're paying $2 billion for a team in the nation's capital that's won a World Series. You're
paying $2 billion for a major fixer-upper is what you're doing.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. I agree.
I mean, I think that's what they were looking for. They were looking for that $2 billion, maybe a little bit higher than that. And we don't know what Leonsis was
loaned off. To be fair, I think their Forbes valuation is right around there. I want to say it's around $2 billion.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, but I'm thinking whoever wants to put an offer in is going to be in that 1.8 range.
They're going to want a little discount.
Yeah, 1.8, 1.7, 1.8.
It's all absurd to me, the amount of money. I can't even fathom it.
I mean, that's why they can't sell it now. If they want 2.2, 2.1, right. No one's going
to
offer that.
But it's hard to buy a team that everyone kind of agrees as a mediocre, not farm system. Mm-hmm. And they're not winning at the big club.
Look, the
distressed asset.
The Forbes valuation 2025 for the Nats is $2.1 billion.
Right.
So if you're the Learners, you look at that number and you're like, this is what we want for the franchise.
Right.
By the way, no one's offering that. You guys can make fun of me. I'm opening myself up to it, but I'm going to ask a question. And you're not allowed to ask questions here without being mocked.
I know, you always have to frame it as, yeah. I'm asking a question, don't attack me.
But you go ahead and attack, because I know that's what everyone likes to do.
Yeah.
Why are they listing in all of the teams? So I put the division, all of MLB in order, right? We're third from the last. Why are they listing the Athletics just as Athletics? Why are they not putting Oakland?
Because they are en route to moving to Vegas, building a stadium. But they haven't moved there
so
yet.
So they just don't want to say
They don't want to say Sacramento Athletics.
Or whatever. Okay.
They're playing in Sacramento.
Okay.
Yeah. They're kind of like
as they transition to
Vegas. So when will they be in Vegas? It's like a couple years.
I think it's two more years.
Okay. Thank you.
So they're still going to be the Athletics next year.
Gotcha.
There you have it.
Thank you.
All right. Don't forget, later in the show, you all have a chance to win a pair of tickets to go see Cypress Hill and Atmosphere at Pier 6 Pavilion. That show is August 15th, so keep listening for your chance to win. It's coming up before the show is done.
Mark Zuckerman, MassinSports.com to kick things off on the diamond. Speaking of kicks, my goodness, did the Nats get kicked in over the weekend. I know the Brewers are good, Mark. That was about as bad a home series as I can remember in the 13 years since the Nats made their first playoff berth back in 2012.
Yeah, I agree with you, Grant. It was ugly. It never really felt like they had much of a chance in any of these games. And deep down, you felt like even if it was relatively close, going into the latter half of the game, once that bullpen gate swung open and take your pick of whoever it was that was going to come in, there was just very little reason to think that they were going to get the job done. And I hope this is the extreme example of this because of how good the opponent was. Hopefully the next 3 days against the A's, it's a little better than that. But I do worry that this is going to be a recurring theme over the final 2 months of the season where because of the shaky state of the bullpen to begin with, and then the fact that you traded probably your only three really reliable arms at the deadline, it's going to be a real challenge to close out any kind of game over the rest of the season.
Zuck, when will we see Dylan Cruz back?
I think we're getting close. I keep trying to predict this, and I'm proven wrong. They are taking it slow. He played six innings the last couple of days with Rochester. He homered last night. That's great. All the signs there are good, but clearly you need to get him up to nine innings, probably playing that back-to-back days before you're 100% confident. So I don't think we're going to see him in this series. Maybe he's ready for the West Coast trip to San Francisco over the weekend. Maybe they want to give him a little more time than that. I understand everybody wants to see him back. I want to see him back. He's one of the things to actually be excited about the rest of the season. But at this stage, given the state of the team, there's really no reason to force that issue. You make sure that he's 100% good to go. And not just healthy, but has a little bit of a sense of timing at the plate. He missed more than 2 months, so you don't just want to throw him to the wolves unless he's had a chance to get his at-bats in again.
Mark, James Wood was playing at a level where he was top five in the entire sport in OPS. And so even with this month where he hasn't hit, his numbers are still that of someone who is going to go on to have what would be considered as an outstanding season. So I want to get that out of the way. But I do want to acknowledge it's a 119 average now for a calendar month, and I wouldn't have thought he was even capable of a rut this long, this bad. What have you seen as now over basically 1 month? I mean, he's had a really hard time hitting the baseball.
Yeah, no, that's the troubling part. You knew he wasn't going to necessarily keep it up for a whole season of, like a 900 OPS every single month. But you hope that the slump, if it was that, would maybe be in the 600s or 700s. And instead, this one had been in the 500s. What's happened? We already know he didn't get a lot of fastballs to begin with when he was going well. Well, he's hardly getting any now, and the reason is because he's not hitting them at all. There was a stat on the Apple TV broadcast the other night. He was 1-for-42 on non-fastball since July 4th. And you can see that with your own eyes. He opens up his front shoulder, his front hip. He's not staying on those pitches and driving them to left field, left center field, the way that he did so well the first half of the season. Now, he's too good. He works too hard. He cares too much to think that that's going to last forever. But it is something he's got to work himself out of because he's not going to get fastballs. He's not going to get a chance to hit, you know, good pitches until he shows he can do that again. And for the first time in his career, this is a legit slump that he's got to learn how to get himself out of.
Mark, appreciate the time, man, and hopefully we get to see some wins against the A's.
Okay, you got it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see you at the ballpark tomorrow. There's Mark Zuckerman. Check him out, massinsports.com, hopping on the Beltway Blitz. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, to talk to the Nats interim general manager Mike DiBartolo, who just put the finishing touches on his first deadline as an acting general manager after many years working under Mike Rizzo, and he's kind enough to hop on with us here to discuss what the Nats did and didn't do. Mike, thank you for the time. It's Grant and Danny. How are you?
Absolutely. Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
How different was yesterday for you? Give us an idea just in the past of what your role was and how involved you were with Mike and what that was like yesterday. Were you the only one working the phones, or was there someone in that DiBartolo role from the past that was kind of handing you the phone when something was almost done? Like, how did it actually work?
Yeah, you know, it was in some ways a lot the same, because I've been heavily involved in the past and been in that room for, 10 plus years, but obviously when you're making the decisions, it's a little bit of a different story. But I was working the phones, most of the time myself. And, I was doing that in the past heavily as well. So, not a huge change in some of the day-to-day, like minute by minute, but, when you're making the final call and obviously you're setting the priorities and, making those final decisions, it was, a little bit different and exciting, and excited about the guys we got back and the strong talent. We were able to build the farm system a little bit further and hopefully make things better for the future.
What was the theme for you guys yesterday? Just in terms of that, was it the priority to widen the depth in the farm system, to try to grab a couple guys that you think may be marquee? Just sort of give me a feel for what you went into yesterday and maybe the past week or so as you've made several moves. What was kind of the main theme there, Mike?
Yeah, the big picture goal was just to bolster, get as much talent, future talent, as we could in whatever way we could. So it wasn't sort of, hey, target one guy, it was, just upside and building depth in the farm system, however we could do it, and just get the best prospects we could. So whether it was pitching, with guys like Eric Swan and Sean Paul Lignan from the Dodgers and Josh Randall and RJ Sales from the Tigers in the Finnegan trade, those are arms we're really excited about. But we also got some position players, Ronnie Cruz, an infielder, young infielder in the Soroka trade from the Cubs, and Christian Franklin, and a really versatile outfielder from the Cubs. Jake Eater, a major league arm, pitching the majors in the Chafin Garcia trade. So, tried to just get value and talent wherever we could, and just build out the depth a little bit further throughout the system.
Mike, another question as to how the deadline actually works, and I guess every situation could be different, but do you highlight players you really like, either based on your databases analytically? You said you used more of kind of a numbers data approach this time around, or, with pro scouts that see someone and call you. I'll use Lignan as an example because he's such a talented prospect. Like, is that someone where you guys go, all right, we want this guy, let's see if we can figure out a way to get him from the Dodgers? Or do the Dodgers call you about call, and then when you get into their system, you find some guys you like? Like, what happens first?
Yeah, it's much more, it's the latter. We've got some guys, certainly the guys that were on expiring contracts, the Soroka, Finnegan, the Rosario, and then areas where, we have a little bit more of organizational depth, and a little bit more of a logjam, like in the situation of Alex Call in the outfield, where we feel like we have several talented outfielders. Teams will call us on these guys, and that's usually the way it works, is teams call and say, hey, we're interested in You know, Michael Soroka, we're looking, you know, for another starter. Like, what are you guys thinking? And we'll dig into the, you know, it's obviously a lot of work and, you know, great job by our whole front office staff and our scouts on the ground. And, you know, we'll dig into those organizations and kind of try to find that sort of sweet spot where, okay, this guy, you know, this guy's a good pitcher. He's, you know, in terms of what we're giving up, but it's on an expiring contract. Let's find, you know, some interesting prospects that we think can really help the system and, you know, that have performed well, that have some attributes we like, you know, in our
but
in
do
a
you
Ryan
have
Cruz.
Like, sorry to jump in. Do you have like a, I'd imagine you guys don't have portfolios on like every player in the minor leagues at Double A. So I'm just like,
we have information on every professional player, you know, on in every organization. And so we'll go through and, you know, we have, you know, performance information. We have scouting information. We have, you know, kind of value information on kind of how we sort of prep out these guys. And we'll talk through those names. Okay. Like, you know, in this range, you know, Ronnie Cruz, we really like, we have a good scouting report on him. He's performed well in rookie ball. He's young, he's athletic. He hits the ball really hard. He has good knowledge of the strike zone. He's athletic. He has a good arm. He can put like, you know, these are all conversations, you know, in more depth, obviously. And we'll kind of talk through all these guys and try to come to a consensus of who we think fits best and who we want to ask for, you know, from the organization. And then you go back and forth with that team and try to see if you can line up on some guys. So these are guys that we highlighted and feel really good about. And, you know, ultimately, you know, to get this major league talent that clubs were seeking, you know, we were able to get these guys in return.
Mike DiBartolo with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Mike, I, you know, looking at the transactions, all makes a lot of sense to me. All the hotel room guys, you know, the guys that probably aren't going to buy here that we're renting, you know what I mean? Just here short term, the Andrew Chapins, Luis mm-hmm. Garcias of the world, totally makes a lot of sense to me. I would have lost mm-hmm. a lot of money if I'd gone into yesterday saying that Josh Bell wouldn't have been traded. I was really, really mm-hmm. surprised by that. I love Josh Bell. He's a great dude. I think he should be either run yep. for office or be a college professor or something like that. He can do whatever he wants.
Sure.
I was pretty surprised by that. I'd love for you to walk us through that.
Yep. Yeah, look, you know, for the guys that were on expiring deals and we were very open-minded to opportunities for them to go to a winner and chase a ring, and that's something we were very open-minded to, and ultimately nothing came together for those guys.
Would you have taken like even a lesser deal? You maybe don't want to get into specifics, but should we assume that to mean there just wasn't much of a market?
You know, I don't want I would just say we were very open-minded to,
gotcha.
to move in those guys.
All right. The one guy we haven't asked about and probably could have and should have started the conversation with is Mike DiBartolo is with us, is Mackenzie Gore. There was so much leading up to the deadline in terms of smoke on Gore. Did you actually have conversations on Gore with teams, or was that just rumors? And did any of them materialize in any kind of serious discussions?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a player as talented as Mackenzie, you know, an all-star who's controllable for years, you know, teams call, and you know, it's our job to listen and evaluate every opportunity that's brought before us. So, certainly, you know, when teams call, and they did, you know, we listen and we discuss it. You know, we discuss it, you know, throughout the organization as to kind of what makes sense for us, and ultimately, you know, we value Mackenzie very highly. He's a great pitcher. And, you know, we just weren't able to line up on something there and think he's a really important part of the club. And it's really not, you know, when you look at what happened in the market, it wasn't much of an outlier relative to some other teams that had some really talented pitchers out there that were also controllable that didn't move on some other teams. And so, you know, we value Mackenzie highly and think really highly of him, and just nothing came together on that.
Yeah, right at the deadline yesterday when we found out that Mackenzie Gore hadn't been traded, I even think on the air, I kind of wondered, could you guys not get the deal you wanted, or maybe ownership wanted to hang on to him? And as last night went on and I looked around, it didn't seem like a lot of the starting pitchers got moved. So I guess I would just get a thought from you on the starting pitching market and maybe why it didn't materialize. But also, is that fair to say that it wasn't that ownership said we're keeping Mackenzie Gore, it was just that you didn't get a deal that you thought was good enough to trade an all-star number one type starter?
Yeah, I can't speak for other teams. I mean, again, for us, you know, we had conversations organizationally. You know, I keep ownership involved and aware of all the conversations I'm having, and we had really productive conversations there, and they had good questions, and they want to win. You know, yeah, again, so ultimately nothing was brought to us that, you know, we had to be extraordinarily motivated to move a guy like Mackenzie Gore, who's an all-star and just an incredibly talented pitcher. And there was nothing that compelled us to do that ultimately.
Mike, also, we haven't had a chance to speak with you since the draft. Would love kind of your thoughts about this kind of whirlwind month or so of player acquisition, you know, feeding your system there for the Nationals. Yeah. Just kind of give us your 30,000 foot view there.
Yeah, I think we've made a lot of progress and accomplished a lot in 3 to 4 weeks. I appreciate the question. I mean, when you look at how much talent we've added to the organization in the last, you know, 3+ weeks, you know, Eli Willett's the number one pick in the draft, a switch hitting shortstop with a great approach at the plate, who's a talented hitter, who's a elite defender. And you can go through the list. Ethan Petrie with a, you know, big power bat, big, you know, some really talented high school arms, and Miguel Semmy Jr. and Coy James and Landon Harmon, Coy James being a, you know, infielder. You know, those five guys, it's a huge amount of talent to add to the organization. And then you add in, you know, the guys we got at the deadline, several talented pitchers, some position players. So, you know, just in the last 3 weeks, I think we've added a lot of talent that's really going to benefit the Nationals over the long term. And I feel really good about that.
Yeah. I mean, oftentimes we shouldn't, you know, go full, you know, Chris Farley, where we bring someone on and just tell them how awesome everything was that they did. But the draft, I was so happy with. It seemed like you guys had a plan. And look, a lot of these guys that you took earlier are teenagers. It's lottery tickets in high school. There's just no way to know with those first five rounds worth of players that you took if they're going to become the players you want them to be or not. But you went in with a plan, and to get Harmon and Semmy and James after you go Willits and Petrie, you guys had to be elated. Was that kind of all telegraphed before it started, or how much of that is kind of figuring things out as you go?
No, it's a great question, and I appreciate the kind words too. I mean, it went exactly as how we hoped. I, you know, quite honestly, it went exactly as we had hoped. It wasn't telegraphed per se. You know, we didn't, you know, Willits was the number one guy on our board, and, you know, to be able to get him and at, you know, sign him at a number that allowed us to get several other talents that we had really circled in the draft as guys we really wanted. You know, you don't know that's, you know, possible until the draft unfolds. And it really did unfold, exactly as we would have hoped, to get, you know, so much upside, and not just, you know, the number one guy on our board, but then several other guys, you know, second, third, fourth rounds that, you know, the talent, you know, especially in some of those later rounds, and we, you know, paid those guys above slot bonuses, but the talent was way above where they were drafted, you know, in my opinion. And so we were just really ecstatic as well as to how that all played out.
Interim GM of the Nats, Mike DeBartolo. I know you got to jump. We'll let you out on this, Mike. You've had about a month here, and in a short order with the draft and with free, and now the trade deadline, I mean, a lot was thrown on your plate as a first-time acting general manager. If this was an audition and you move five guys, four of which were rentals, or six guys, five rentals and one that was controllable for 10 new players to the system, and then the draft we just talked about, I know it's not about you, but you got to feel pretty good about what you've shown as a GM here over the last month as a candidate for the job.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, it's a credit to the staff around and a whole team effort, you know, both the scouts and the front office staff, and everybody's been working incredibly hard. And it's been very exciting and rewarding to see how motivated everybody is and how hard everybody's working and the great job everybody else is doing. So, you know, I had enough on my plate. You know, as you said, it's a whirlwind between jumping right in with the draft and deadline. So haven't even thought about, you know, the implications of any of that other than just excited about the talent we brought in for the Nats. So, but I really appreciate the kind words.
Mike, thank you for joining us, man. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed it.
Mike DeBartolo, the interim general manager with the Nationals in the wake of yesterday's trade deadline, discussing some of the moves the Nats made. They trade six players out. Five were players that were leaving or weren't under contract beyond this year. They get 10 players they add to the minor league system, including three in their top 15 via MLB pipeline. They did okay considering they really didn't trade much.
Right. They didn't give up a lot.
Their biggest asset was Alex Call.
Uh-huh.
And you flood the system with more talent. I still am willing to rave about the draft. I just thought the execution of the plan was phenomenal. We'll see. They're going to go out and shop for executives and managers, but the Bartolos acquitted himself well as data guy, which is, you know, movement a lot of people have wanted to see for a long time.
I'll tell you this real quick. Everybody I've ever spoken to where his name has come up has had glowing things to say about him.
And, he's just a worker,
in all walks.
Man.
Yeah. And all, regardless of what job you had with the Nationals or were dealing with him, they've been very impressed with that guy.
He's very well liked.
Yeah.
He is in anonymity in the shadows, just worked really hard for a long time. It's hard generally not to like people who get very little credit and just do a lot of work. And that's kind of been his role as Rizzo's right-hand man for an extended period of time.